It's the middle of the summer, so that must mean one thing. Rain? No. Bucket hats, mosh pits, warm cans of beer, crowd singing ole ole ole. Never quite understand why we do this, but we do. Waterlogged tents, welly boots that I have to say looked cute online, but actually cut the feet off you within an hour. We are talking, of course, about music festivals. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and in a few minutes, we're going to take a deeper dive into the workings of an Irish summer festival and asking if we have reached peak festival in this little old country of ours. But first, we have to talk about Glastonbury because it starts today, runs for 5 days, and it really is the biggest of the big beasts when it comes to music festivals. I will be watching most of it from the comfort of my couch. Thank you very much, BBC. I can't tell you, to be honest, this year who the headline act is across any of the nights, the big nights, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, but I know who is playing because they are generating headlines every other day, and that is Kneecap. They're due to perform at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And this week, the British Prime Minister has got involved with their performance. Keir Starmer has said that the appearance of Kneecap is not appropriate. And the Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, who, let's face it, has a little bit of beef with Kneecap because she tried to refuse them a funding award when she was a minister and they took her to court over it, she's demanded that the BBC don't actually show their set. She's calling it propaganda. Now, you probably all saw last week, I'm sure you watched the footage of Kneecap member Liam O'Gohany, better known as Mukara. He appeared in court in London. He's been charged with expressing support for Hezbollah, the Lebanese terrorist group, at a recent concert of theirs in the UK. He denies the charge. He's going to be back up in court in August. But I think it is fair to say that all eyes are going to be on the West Hall stage if they make it there this Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. I'm joined by two guests, Louise Bruton, DGM music critic, and Fáinne O'Brien. Louise, Kneecap, right, they've had performances cancelled at German festivals. I think they had a project down in Cornwall at the Eden project that was cancelled too. But Glastonbury, they've resisted. It seems that they are set to perform this Saturday. It's going to go ahead.
As far as we know, as far as we're concerned, Kneecap are definitely playing their 4 o'clock slot. I'm surprised they probably don't have a higher slot on the headline, because they're certainly getting a lot of attention. And I think they're probably going to have one of the biggest crowds at the festival this year, just based on the success that they've had between their music and their movie, and also the amount of activism that they've been doing for Northern Irish people, for young men, for the people of Palestine, and now it seems for artists and their freedom to speak freely.
Let's talk about the support and indeed the criticism, Louise, that they have received on both sides. I think it's fair to say it's come from kind of unexpected sources.
It has come from probably one of the higher sources that you wouldn't want to challenge, and that is the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, who has put out a public message to say that he doesn't see that their upcoming performance at Glastonbury is an appropriate thing to do. And this really begs the question of what is appropriate art. And I think that Kneecap has found support in a very unusual place, and that is Leo Varadkar, who has he had posted a comment under one of their Instagram posts. And he said, and this is the quote, "I no longer hold office nor have any mandate, so my views don't count for much anymore. I get that. But I really thought this was some sort of a gag. It's the role of artists to be avant-garde, inappropriate, challenging, disruptive, from James Joyce to Sex Pistols and Playboy." So it's an unlikely source of support. And he's dead right, because if artists are to be appropriate, that is going to be some very boring material that people will be consuming. It can't even be art. It's probably be the very thing that the British government are accusing Kneecap of being, and that is propaganda. And this idea of a musician not being able to speak up for the causes that they believe in, I think is just a very scary precedence. And I'm so glad that Glastonbury are just not paying any heed to the many, many people that are campaigning to get Kneecap taken off the bill. A huge letter was circulated with a lot of big names, a lot of big unknown names, I suppose, working the kind of more financial and power side of music, record label heads, a lot of big PR firms wrote a private letter asking for NECAP to be removed from the festival. But that letter actually leaked, which is just a real moment of people really showing which way that they lie. And then their manager, Todd Lattie, who's an English rapper and producer, he then shared a public letter from hundreds of artists who are supporting NECAP and don't believe in this message of censorship and has any place in the arts and entertainment world.
Yeah, and those artists include English Teacher, Pulp, Massive Attack, Paul Weller, who I actually saw was in attendance at the court case a couple of weeks ago in the UK. In its history, in Glasgow's history, and that's going back to 1970, which is, I was going to say 45, but that's actually 55 years ago. I always get caught out by that decade, extra decade. Has any artist been banned?
There's been a few acts that have been asked not to come back, but they actually have come back. So it's hard to know how strong a ban is. In 1992, the Marky Smith from the band The Fall, he was asked not to come back because that year in the festival, the Glastonbury was called, Glastonbury was called the Glastonbury CND Festival in solidarity with the campaign for nuclear disarmament. Marky Smith, when he was performing on stage, he made some pro-nuclear weapons statements around the time, and then he was asked not to return, but he actually did come back in 2010 when he was performing with Gorillaz. There's been acts that have refused to play. Queen, Brian May's and Queen have refused to play because Brian May has butted heads with Michael Eavis, who's the owner of the festival, over his stance on badger culling. So Brian May loves the badgers, whereas Michael Eavis, he runs a working farm and badgers can be quite a hazard to cattle. So he practices the art of badger culling, and that is why one of the biggest rock bands in UK history has never played the biggest festival in UK history.
We all have our causes, Louise, and you learn something new every day on News Talk Daily. I was not aware of that. When it comes to the performance on Saturday, and we'll all be at home, I'm sure, watching it if we haven't got tickets to Glasgow, what can we expect from NECAP? Because they do know how to be provocative. They do know how to generate media coverage. Look at the posters last week at that court case in London. More blacks, more dogs, more Irish, Macara. They know what they're doing. They know how to capture attention.
They know how to make an entrance. That is one thing for sure. So I think that they are going to hand that up during the performance. I hope we get to see it, because there have been calls for the BBC not to actually broadcast their performance, which again would be a huge act of censorship, because NECAP will be a spectacle. And if you don't get to see that on television, that's just bad programming.
Fiacna O'Brien, on the Hothouse Flowers are making their way back to Worthy Farm again this year. You're also playing the acoustic stage actually on Saturday night. What do you say to those who are calling for NECAP to be removed from the lineup?
I say absolute nonsense is the first thing I say. And why do I say that? Because I think they have no place in dictating to a festival such as Glastonbury, you know, who have curated this festival themselves very successfully for over 50 years, a festival that represents environmentalism, that represents humanity, that has always had an anti-military, anti-armaments agenda, that is anti-war. And then you look at NECAP. What an extraordinary act. They have revitalized our sense of ourselves like no other Irish band has done in recent years, not only from their incredible use of the Irish language, mixing it in with their extraordinary style of music, which is almost punk, hip hop. There's an element of Irish traditional music in there as well, just in the messages that are coming through in the songs. They're a remarkable act, and they have been standing up fearlessly for humanity in recent times.
Should freedom of expression or freedom of the arts ever be limited or ever be policed, do you think?
I mean, my gut reaction is no. Art is art. Art is a reflection of an individual creative person's heart and soul. If somebody's art or somebody's expression gets to a point where it is maybe endangering human life or promoting something dangerous, then maybe. But even then, I don't know, you know?
To the argument that's been coming, you know, from people like Hemi Badenoch, she says, look, this is just propaganda that we're going to see from NECAP on Saturday. What you're actually doing is rewarding extremism, I think was one of the phrases that she says. What do you say to that?
For a band like NECAP, who have experienced colonialism themselves in their own home place, and who also have a very direct experience of life in the West Bank. One of their brothers runs a gym there in the Lajee Center in the West Bank. So they're not just jumping on a bandwagon here. They're talking from experience. And to my mind, they're talking with huge intelligence.
I know you yourselves are playing on Saturday night a little bit later over in the acoustic stage. Do you intend to attend Kneecap's gig?
Oh God, I hope to see them. I've actually never seen them live. I'd be very, very excited to see them live. I think the crowd are going to absolutely love them. I think it's going to be difficult to even get close to the stage where they're playing, but I'm going to make every effort. I think we're arriving on site at around 2 o'clock. So my calculations are right. We're playing in Glasgow the night before on Friday, and we head down to Bristol and then drive into the Glastonbury side. So I believe we're going to be there till early afternoon. And they play at 4 and we're not on until 8. So there's plenty of time to stroll down to the Pyramid Stage and catch a glimpse of them.
Louise and Fekna, thank you for being with me on News Talk Daily. I'm joined now in News Talk HQ by two people who know more than a little about festivals and Ireland's insatiable appetite for live music. Dr. Michael Murphy is a music industry veteran. He lectures at the Institute of Art, Design and Technology in Dunleary, and he's the co-author of a brilliant book, Sounds Irish, Acts Global. And Craig Hughes, who perhaps is better known to many of you as the political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, but when Craig isn't stalking the corridors of Leinster House, he's running the Night and Day Festival, which takes place this weekend actually at Loch Key Forest Park in County Roscommon. Michael, I'm going to christen you Mr. Gig because you have been, you reckon, to about 5,000 gigs and counting, and a few of those I imagine are going to be festivals. What is it about them, Michael, that you love so much?
I'm very introverted. So what I love about a festival is that you're standing generally in a field with a whole lot of other people, and you don't have to talk to them, but you're having this communal experience. It's like a pop-up village to me. You're with people who are there for a reason, which is the music, but everyone's having an individual moment. So I find them life-changing, to be honest. Like a great concert experience will set me up for months of joy and for a whole lifetime of memories.
So you live off the energy that you experience at a festival.
Yeah, but you know, I've no musical skill, and I realised very early on that my role in life would be to support people who do have skill and talent. And that was by going, paying money to go and see people. You know, what I have seen, because my first festival was in 1981, and I got on the car ferry, went to England for a thing called Futurama. And now it was primitive. It was in a big agricultural hall, and it smelt like 5,000 sheep with diarrhea had just been in there. Like, it was rank. And, you know, they offered us accommodation, which was sleeping in the bull ring where they used to show the cows. And they gave everyone a bin bag, a black bin bag. But it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I thought, this is what I want to do for my entire existence.
And speaking of Ireland, when you look at the scene here, there does appear to have been a proliferation of festivals, given the fact that we are an island off the coast of northwestern Europe, population of over 5 million people, not that big, and let's face it, a fairly questionable climate. Do we punch above our weight here?
Oh, we're the world champions at going to gigs and in particularly at going to festivals. But the history of festivals in Ireland is very recent compared to other European countries. It wasn't until 1977 that we had the first festival in Dublin. And that was Daly Mount with Thin Lizzy and the Boomtown Rats. And we didn't have the experience, so all the stuff had to be brought in from England. So it's quite recent. But what has happened is that we've developed a skill set. We've a huge workforce of talented, experienced people.
Craig, you are, of course, the political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, but you're only moonlighting as a journalist. The real career, the real passion for you is music and your own festival, Night and Day. The offering now at festivals, and I would say the profile of festival goers in Ireland, has completely changed.
I think so. I think it's changed from being your diehard music lovers to offering a bit to everyone. And when it comes to kind of comfortable surroundings, we're very lucky where we are in Lochie Forest Park in County Roscommon, because the campsite is actually a purpose-built campsite year round. So we have indoor toilets in the campsite, we have indoor showers. And then, of course, we bring in glamping as well for people who want that extra bit of comfort. Of course, you're going to have all the great music, which is still the primary driver for people attending festivals. But after that, you've got to make sure that your food is right, that you have a vegetarian options, that you have vegan options, and that you can cater for everyone. And also, don't forget that to cater for the kids who are coming as well, who might want something a bit plainer. It all kind of ties into a kind of broader experience. And I guess finally, just to finish this, we also have this year a really expansive wellness offering. So apart from our hot tubs and saunas overlooking the lake, you can also get up in the morning and do Reiki, yoga or breathwork workshops.
This is not the festival I remember. Oxygen 2007, I don't think I showered for 5 days. I would say I washed my teeth and used a wet wipe. That was about the height of it. Have we gone, Craig, be honest, have we gone a bit soft?
I think so. I mean, some of the complaints that we get or some of the questions we get from people, I mean, will there be electricity in my tent? I was like, no. You're coming to a field.
Your hair straighteners.
And we're already at the higher end of what we're offering people just because of our infrastructure. I think since COVID, there's been a bit of a shift towards people being a bit more precious. So again, thankfully, we're lucky that we have indoor showers to offer people as well. But yeah, I think there's nothing better for me when I do get the chance, really, is to just get out to a festival with your friends for the whole weekend and kind of just really immerse yourself in that experience for the weekend.
Your festival is now 4 years old, so you're pretty experienced at this point. Tell me about the to-do list when it comes to setting up a festival, Craig. It's a lot more than just booking acts.
Yeah, no, it's an exhaustive list. I mean, first of all, you have to have the venue. So we've moved from our initial venue now the first year. I mean, then you're looking at security, you know, your fencing, all the other infrastructure things you got to bring onto the site, your toilets, your insurance. Everyone who's really coming onto site has to be accounted for. So whether it's the wellness providers, whether it's the VIPs, what access cards they need to get, where are they going to park, how many traders do you have, what electricity do they need, how much festoon lighting do you need going down here, you know. Then you're looking at, okay, your bigger acts, you need to get them here, got to find somewhere to stay, ground transport all around the weekend as well, your bar license, your bar staff, you're partnering with providers on that side as well. It's juggling all those balls.
It's not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah.
I mean, we did see in the last fortnight, Michael, Beyond the Pale Festival, this real moment of panic, I'm sure, for those who were attending, but more significantly for those who were organising this festival. They had to rely on this last-minute cash injection from a larger entertainment company. What impact do you think that has?
Well, Craig knows this, and Craig, I can't believe how composed you are, you know, considering what you do and what's ahead of you.
He told me he hasn't slept in 48 hours. Okay. And before we came into the studio.
That's the festival life. The margins can be really tight on a festival. So you might need 80, you might need 95% capacity to break even. Now, if you do, and it's a large festival, you're in a comfortable profit situation. But there's huge competition in Ireland. We're incredibly innovative. And I don't think we give ourselves enough credit that the amount of niche festivals, the amount of huge ones, but the margins are fine. You've got to get your line up right. You've got to know your customer. And that might be a customer with children, or it might be someone who wants to forget about their children. So it's highly competitive. So we would expect to see some things. I wasn't shocked about what happened over the last couple of weeks, you know, with those wobbles, because we're incredibly well served with festivals, and that attracts more people who think, hey, festivals make a load of money.
Cash flow seems to be a major challenge. Do you think that was the main reason that so many of the festivals that we would have enjoyed in Ireland have gone by the wayside? I'm thinking of Independence in Cork, Wild Roots in Sligo, one of my favourites, the Westport Festival in Westport House, all gone.
Yeah, but things change. Like they're gone, but they've been replaced. And I would argue that they've been replaced with better offerings. The music industry has fundamentally changed. So, you know, we used to buy records, we used to buy CDs, and that was the economic flow. Now artists need festivals to stay alive, to make enough money to make a record so they can tour again. There will always be churn, but there's a lesson there, and that's if you see a lineup and you're even vaguely tempted, go. I think the fact that there is that churn is a real incentive to think, can I afford not to miss this? Will my mates be talking about this in 20 years?
But is there a chance that there's that churn, Craig, because we simply have too many festivals in Ireland? And when you have so many, the offering is going to get diluted?
There's certainly a lot of competition. I mean, we're fortunate in the sense that, you know, out west there isn't as much as there is, say, down in Leinster, which is quite more competitive. But Michael, like as you were saying on the kind of tight margins, I mean, that really plays into it. When you look at even the impact inflation would have on all festivals, right? Think about the price it would bring to fly, say, 10 people that are touring with a big international act. That's all extra flight costs, all extra hotel costs. Their wages have just gone up anyway by inflation. When you get them to get here, the ground transport to get them to the festival, that's all gone up. Then you got all your staff that are working on site, like your security, that's all gone up as well. And like for us, we're really lucky in the sense that we're a family business, in the sense that it's me and my two uncles, but we have a much broader family network who puts their shoulder to the wheel for us. So we have people in key areas, whether it's doing the family friendly area, doing the food vendors, helping with site construction, all working really essentially for free to help us get this to.
So this is every auntie, second cousin,
yeah, pretty much
great aunt once removed, they're all called in.
Yeah, and
that's what you need to survive.
Well, like I don't think how we would have got this far without that. We wouldn't have, pure and simple. You know, if we had to pay people for all those roles, we'd be taking on a massive amount of debt to have done that. And look, maybe we could have, over the long term, recuperated back. But yeah, without that, I mean, it would have been impossible with labour costs as they are.
What about tax relief? Lower VAT rate to support ticket sales in the festival industry? I'm just going to work on the assumption that both of you think that's a good idea.
I actually don't, because I genuinely want those underground grassroots festivals. Now, Britain has had a brutal 12 months where a large number of festivals have gone under. And some of them were long running festivals. The States, we've seen like some festivals that were running for 20 years that have collapsed. But if the problem is that Amazonification of the music industry, surely we should be fighting back. And genuinely, like I've seen these micro scenes in Ireland, in Europe, in the States, sometimes coming out of punk rock, of someone who just thinks, I like three bands, so I'm going to put them on. And it can be bare bones. It doesn't have to be paninis and hair straighteners. It can be just a good laugh with your mates.
Okay, so no showers, back to baby wipes and hair not touched for 4 days. Yeah, that's the kind of festival I would probably support. Finally, Craig, obviously you're going to be at your own festival this weekend, Night and Day. The bucket list though, what's the festival that you would love to go to?
I suppose I'll have to scratch the last beer at some point if we ever take a break from Night and Day, because it's at the same weekend. So
it is. I have to say, I know this is cheating, but I really enjoy watching Glastonbury from the comfort of my couch. Mm-hmm. But I don't, that doesn't make me a real festival goer. I'm probably a cheat. You haven't done Glastonbury either, Mike.
No, but the, you know, people will stay at home and have their own festival watching Glastonbury. But my advice is, if you see two bands in a field, in a lineup, go to these festivals.
You've sold it to me both again. My thanks to Michael Murphy and Craig Hughes. You've been listening to News Talk Daily with me, Ciara Doherty. You can get in touch with the team here at any time. Email us on newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. And remember, you'll find us each weekday morning on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. Until the next time, goodbye. And sure, I might even bump into you myself at a gig in a field somewhere in Ireland this summer. Bring your wellies.